Howard, who's in our Touch Points Rehab interview chair. He is the Executive Communications Director of the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. Howard, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
And good morning to you gentlemen, too.
So how can we celebrate Valentine's Day without breaking the bank?
That's a good question.
That's a great question. You know, for some people, a simple card and some candy is enough, a quiet evening at home. But we do know that it's expensive to go out on any holiday, and certainly Valentine's Day is no exception. Let's put it in perspective first for people who don't know that according to the National Retail Federation estimates, almost 55% of us will celebrate Valentine's Day this year, and it's expected to be a record breaker, surpassing more than $19.5 billion for cash, flowers, meals, entertainment, and more. And by the way, for those who don't know, Valentine's Day is commonly believed to have originated with a Roman festival in the year 496. So the celebration has obviously changed over the past several thousand years, and even more dramatically since the Internet entered our lives. So you have a generation now that tends to prefer plastic over money. And there's a good reason for it, because...
Plastic over money?
I beg your pardon?
You say plastic over money?
They prefer plastic over money. And there's a good reason, because they were born into a generation where their favorite store is the Internet. And cash is not going to do you any good when you're ordering online.
I didn't get that one.
Exactly. So here's what we can do to save some money for Valentine's Day. Flowers are flowers are flowers, regardless of where you buy them. You can get cut flowers and bouquets for considerably less money than if you buy them at a supermarket rather than a standalone store. Mm-hmm. Here's a good one. Share an experience. These are called experiential gifts, and they include things like a getaway next weekend, a dance lesson, cooking class, go-karting, or a few hours at a spa. You can get a lot for your money for those types of things, and they're very much appreciated. Consider a gift that you can both enjoy. That can mean planning a vacation for later on this year, or you can buy some sort of gadget. It doesn't have to be an entertainment center. There are plenty of tens of thousands of potential gadgets. And you might be surprised by some of the Valentine's Day themed card decks and board games that you can find at a bookstore. And when all else fails, of course, you can ask friends. Women should consult both male and female friends. And the same for men. And I think it's worth it to mention, and I'm going to say this particularly to the gentlemen who are listening, if you are late or if you forget about Valentine's Day, that's at your own peril. All I can suggest is don't make the mistake next year, or you'll pay for it.
Hey, Howard, this is very fascinating to me, because I always thought Hallmark cards started Valentine's Day.
You said I did, too.
It was way
right up in Enfield, Connecticut.
In the 15th century?
This came out, as I said, the year 296, I believe.
The
year 496, that's correct.
Okay. Wow.
And I heard the same thing, that it was sort of commercialized by Hallmark greeting cards. That's something that it's worth checking. I'll check that on Snopes.
Up in Enfield, Connecticut.
Well, part of me is kidding, but I just thought they did it because they need to do something to boost the economy between Christmas and Easter, and so, voila, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, well, that's a seasonal item, Dan and Brad, because, you know, it happens for Christmas, for Hanukkah, birthdays, anniversaries, and so on. And this is just to remind us that a card or a book will, and the bookstores are great at this time of year for things. I used to think it's just books, but I would go around and see all types of fun things, again, including games. And I'm not talking your usual small card games. I'm talking about things that that are made for couples.
Now, I want to get to this credit card thing, because you mentioned teenagers or college students, and, you know, some of them get credit or debit cards. Some of them go into debt because of that. What should they know?
Well, one of the first things they should understand is it does not end when you make the purchases. And it might be lost for the first little while. But what teenagers and college students should understand is that if they are late on a payment or miss a payment, that can lower their credit score. And as it is, when they first apply for credit, their credit score is low simply because they don't have a credit history that's established. So I think the hardest part is when you have plastic in your hands and not money, then it's not really the same. When you run out of cash, that's it. You can't buy anymore. A credit card obviously extends that. So one of the things that should be taken into account is that obviously the cardholder is responsible and should pay off the monthly balances, and also because the interest charges get quite hefty if you miss a payment or don't pay anything at all. If you have a debit card, it can be even more of a problem because those purchases are coming straight out of your bank account. So you want to, you know, and there's another discussion to have with your parents or at the bank as to which will be more appropriate, a debit card or a credit card. I think a credit card, we've always said that it offers protection that debit cards simply do not. And this is probably one of the most important. If you are just getting plastic or applying for it, to pull your free credit report from annualcreditreport.com. It's annualcreditreport.com. It's sanctioned by the government. It's free. It's not conditional upon buying any other services. The reason you want to do this right away is identity thieves are known to obtain social security numbers, not only for teenagers, but get this, for children too. And in some cases, the victims won't even know until the first time they check their credit report or apply for credit. And that and different mistakes that might be in there, those are the kinds of things that you'd want to close up and fix right away.
Okay, I know, Brad, we've got a traffic update coming up, and then we're going to get back to Howard. Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director, Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut. Brad, back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair this morning is Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director, Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut. And I know, Howard, that the Connecticut Business Bureau has sent out a consumer alert about ultra-rare apparel. What can you tell us about this?
Ultra-rare apparel sells T-shirts and hoodies and running pants with logos on them that are well-known. And after an investigation, our investigations department noticed there was a pattern, not the least of which was, last time I checked the numbers, there were almost 90 complaints against this company since last November. And of these 87 complaints, the company responded to zero of them. And by not responding, that's probably one of the more egregious things that a company can do. They are not Better Business Bureau accredited. And here's what the consumer said. According to the complaints, they say ultra-rare apparel charged for products they did not ship. They failed to provide transaction confirmations or tracking numbers. They ignored consumers' phone calls and emails and neglected to respond to BBB complaints. And some customers...
Wow.
Detail losses in the hundreds of dollars. So some of the complaints have been closed, either because the company did not respond. And in a handful of cases, the consumer says, yes, my things arrived, but months after I asked for it. I think it's important that in cases like this, what I tend to do is you establish a date, and they should give you a tracking number and proof of purchase as you purchase or just after you purchase your merchandise. If you don't get that within a reasonable amount of time, and we're talking within 24 hours, then the very first thing I would do is contact the seller. If I can't, I'll go straight to the credit card company because they're not allowed to charge your card until such time as the merchandise has left the warehouse. Now, this is under the Federal Trade Commission's Mail, Internet, or telephone order merchandise rule. And under that, the businesses are obliged to deliver that merchandise within 30 days. And unless it's otherwise expressly spelled out on their website, it will take 2 months, for example. If you agree to that, or if you agree expressly that, again, you might want to take it even longer than that for them to deliver, it doesn't matter, that's fine. But they are obliged, if you don't say anything, 30 days. And after those 30 days, you're entitled to a refund, again, provided you can get hold of the principals of the company, and they have to return your money within one billing cycle. So that's, again, the businesses should not debit a card or bank account until the item is shipped. So let's keep a check on our accounts to see when a company debits your card or your bank account. And if no confirmation of sale or tracking number is provided, as I said, you can go and open up a case and make sure that you don't get any sort of money debited that should not be. And it's worth mentioning, this is the second case of its time, second case within a short period of time that Connecticut Better Business Bureau has found a company like this. This was operating in Cheshire. It was not a huge office building. Not that it matters with the internet these days. But as a note of caution, when we are clicking around to look for the lowest price on things, or when we're on social media, which is how I believe a lot of people found out about this company, be very selective about where you're buying from, because this seems to be a new thing that's emerging. People will open up a website, they'll order the merchandise from China, for example, and there'll be no hint of that on these websites
that
they have. And in one of them, I figured, well, it does say that they will not be shipping during the Chinese during Chinese holidays. But that was one website. And here's the issue. If you buy something for $35 from a company like this, a T-shirt or two, and they don't have it, you're in a situation where you have to wait, as well as them having to wait, in which time it becomes ugly. People want their merchandise. And, you know, a case like Ultra Rare, we're just telling the public about the problems that other people have had. So be very careful, because you may not know who you're doing business with. And if this is the trend that we're seeing, it's all the more reason to check out a company or file a complaint with Better Business Bureau if you're having trouble with these sorts of things.
Howard, I wanted to ask you a question about the kinds of things. What is, for you, for example, for your company, what is the toughest thing, the toughest type of areas that people have gone through and shouldn't have?
That's a tough one. I would say, you know, if you want to make a very general category, I would say in cases where any kind of company where they don't, where they put down a deposit and they don't get something for their money, and there's no transparency, they cannot reach the principals. I would say that is probably one of the main problems.
Really?
Yeah. And I would say, unfortunately, the other is we tend not to read the fine print. A company should not hide behind it. The fine print really is, those are the terms and conditions, and they should be prominently displayed on a website.
But what usually happens is, you know, Howard, in some cases, whether it's a website or even if you make a transaction, they shove these papers in front of you, including the fine print, and they say, here, sign, and you almost feel forced to sign. Otherwise, you don't get the product you're looking for.
Well, you're correct. And I was just watching the other day that if you like a company on Facebook, for example, and you don't read those terms and conditions, then they can actually end up using your information, including your name, and sell this to other companies.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not something that we look for. And again, that makes a case for going on sites, you know. And this is for a fairly large company, but we've got to read these kinds of things because we don't know what we're giving away. And particularly in the aftermath of the Equifax data breach, there's not only concern just about the breaches, which we cannot control, but for some years now, customers have understandably, consumers are understandably mistrustful of the way that retailers and third parties are handling their information, and with good reason.
Now, as you know, it's income tax season, and there are the real preparers out there, but there also might be some scammers, Howard. What should people know as far as going about selecting a preparer for their income tax?
Very first thing is, if it's a complex return, then you might want to find a tax preparer who's either a certified public accountant, a tax attorney, or enrolled agent. And the reason for that is any of these three can represent you before the IRS in all matters, and that includes an audit. And you might want to find out if they're affiliated with a professional organization But more important, as I said, this is for complicated situations. If you do the tax return yourself, then you're responsible. The IRS really doesn't care who put the return together. You're responsible as a taxpayer. If your return is less complex than that, one of the tax chains would be perfect for you. Again, though, how you should be asking how long are they available if there's a problem with the return. And if you do your own taxes online or through software, or have a family member or friend doing it, same thing. They will not be able to represent you in tax court. And I think it's fair to say, especially at this time of year, ignore any calls from people who bully you and claim to be with the IRS and want you to send money within 24 hours or you'll be arrested. Just ignore anything that appears to come from the IRS. If they want to reach you, they have all of your information, and they will send you a letter. So let's just be on the lookout for that type of thing.
Oh, if they want to reach you, they'll find you, Howard.
They'll find you.
Oh, no question about that. And a quick note is probably the easiest way to prevent tax ID theft, aside from filing early when possible, is also the easiest, and that's to use e-file. File it online with the IRS and to ask that the refund be deposited directly into your bank account. And that way you can also get your refund faster. The IRS, however, says that more than 9 out of 10 refunds, people get them in fewer than 21 calendar days. Maybe longer if there's an error or omission. But having it e-filed and direct deposited reduces your exposure to fraud. And as I said, I've received a refund in fewer than 2 weeks.
All right.
Howard, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
You folks have a wonderful week.
You as well. You take care, Howard. Take care.
Thanks.